Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we continue now with the third and final week of our April series, Reefer Managed, where we cover all things weed through this Friday, April 19th, ahead of our three-hour national call-in on Saturday, 4:20, called Ask a Legal State, when we will do just that. We will hook up New Yorkers and New Jerseyans, people from Connecticut, too, where we're considering legal weed. It's further along in New York and New Jersey, and hook you all up with people in Colorado and California and elsewhere, and ask people from legal states about the highs and lows and best and worst ways to go on marijuana law. That's Saturday from noon to 3. Hope you'll join me. But right now, this question. If legalization is really going to happen in the tri-state area, who will get to sell weed? Are local governments thinking of how to give opportunities to residents, especially of communities hard hit by the decades of criminalization? Or are we at risk of creating big weed, like we have big pharma and big oil and all of that, corporations that will monopolize the market? Joining me now, Allison Martin, co-founder of Cannabis Wire, which covers all things in this area. And she's co-author of the book, A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. She's also an adjunct professor at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Hi, Allison. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me. Love being here.
Define a term for us here. Seed to sale, pot marketing. Seed to sale, like farm to table. What's that and why is it controversial?
Like farm to table. That's probably a slightly better version than seed to sale. I mean, seed to sale is basically the regulation of the cannabis plant from the actual seed all the way through the mechanism of growing, cultivation, processing into these oils, and then to sale in a shop.
And then to sell them in a shop. And so this is vertical integration, they would call it in business, right?
Yeah, so vertical integration is basically the ability of a company to control the production of their product from seed to sale, yes. And why it's controversial, especially in a state like New York, is that vertical integration really is very, very expensive to set up. So you're talking about people or companies that are very well capitalized that have the ability to even do this, to vertically integrate. There are, of course, advantages to these businesses having the ability to vertically integrate because, of course, they can, control their supply chain and more easily react to market demands and things like that. But, of course, if we're talking about, diversity candidates and that sort of thing, it's a lot harder to get into like a vertically integrated market because it's so expensive.
And so, for example, there are two versions of a cannabis legalization bill in New York State, maybe at least two, but the ones I know about, Senator Liz Krueger of Manhattan has a bill that would ban vertical integration with the exception of microprocessors. We could get into that exception. But Governor Cuomo's bill would allow the existing 10 medical marijuana companies to bid on licenses to sell retail. And so those 10 companies would be the only 10 vertically integrated in the state, but that's still 10 big companies who would have a big head start in legal recreational marijuana, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I sort of like to make up words for these acronyms like CERTA and MRTA. Liz Krueger's proposal would ban those vertically integrated companies. And Cuomo's proposal, by giving the sort of leg up to these existing medical cannabis companies. We're talking about industry giants like Acreage Holdings, of which former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld is on the board, along with former Speaker John Boehner. And also, Curaleaf, MedMen, which many people know about, it's on Fifth Ave. MedMen, you can't really leave LAX without seeing a MedMen billboard. They're pretty well branded. And these are the companies that would basically get the mover and shaker advantage in New York.
Let me stay on MedMen, for example, because we haven't talked about them on the show yet, and yet they do have a big presence here. Rolling Stone magazine said in a profile that MedMen will soon have 37 wood-paneled Apple-like stores, down to bud tenders who can check you out with iPhones in 5 states with prime locations near the Vegas Strip, adjacent to Beverly Hills, and on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan.
Real estate's definitely a big play of theirs.
real estate? You mean going into the high-end neighborhoods?
Yeah, location, location, location. You know, they want to be where there's a lot of foot traffic, a lot of, you know, vehicle traffic. And, you know, real estate's been part of their business strategy for sure.
And last year, MedMen opened a store had a license for that on Fifth Avenue for, I'm seeing the stat, $26.5 million. That's not including the price of the lease. And according to Rolling Stone, the untidy fact that New York is at least a year away from full legalization, unquote. The company also spent $53 million for a retail license in Florida, which is 2 years out from legalization if it happens at all. So is this what big weed looks like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, MedMen is definitely what, quote unquote, big weed looks like. I mean, it's interesting. I have found MedMen to be very strategic about their branding. They're one of the first companies in the country that sort of did this national branding effort. You know, I don't think you could walk past too many people who are cannabis consumers, you know, and they wouldn't be able to tell you what color sweatshirts do MedMen employees wear. The answer is red. But I think they did sort of play on that Apple Store thing. And I think probably, you know, the C-level employees at MedMen love that everybody knows what MedMen stores look like and compare them to Apple stores and that, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I think, you know, MedMen is one of the biggest in the country for sure. And is also, you know, quote unquote, big weed.
Listeners, our guest in our Reefer Managed series today is Allison Martin, co-founder of the news organization Cannabis Wire, which covers this area, co-author of the book A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition. As our topic in our Reefer Managed series today is licensing and vertical integration, seed to sale, as opposed to breaking it up and letting lower income or community-based people have the licenses to stores and things like that. And we can take some phone calls on this at 212-433-WNYC. Anyone in the business, trying to get in the business, anybody wearing a red MedMen shirt right now at work?
Definitely call in, please.
With your experience, 212-433-9692. And Fred in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC with Allison Martin. Hi, Fred.
Hello. Been an awesome show last week or so.
Thank you.
So I have a question, and then I have my what I think is a good solution.
Mm-hmm.
The first question is, there's all this talk of how are we going to keep the big companies and big money out of this, but all the people that are, for the most part, in it now and have lots of money, their money is illegal. And to get into the business, their risk of money laundering is going to be huge. And I've seen this through the medical marijuana where I've lived all over the country. So what I'm saying is perhaps we turn it into a, you know, seed to sale owned by the state, or make it so it can be like a nonprofit organization, and it we put the money in the hands of the people working there. So say any pot shop employee or farmer is going to make X amount of money per year, per month, or whatever.
So. Is there a best model that you've seen around the country? Because it sounds like you've been looking at this.
No, I just
you have those thoughts.
In Montana and all over the country. So, like in Montana, they passed medical marijuana, but nobody thought it would pass. So it was like a one-page document. So the industry blew up in 1 year, and then the legislature came back and changed it all. But as soon as it blew up, about every big pot shop in Montana got audited by the federal government, and a lot of people went down for, you know, illicit funds and stuff.
Fred, I'm going to leave it there. Allison, any thought?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts. I mean, the nonprofit model, I think, would solve a lot of these issues. And I think it would be very enticing to regulators. But, you know, we kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit on the privatization of cannabis, and I'm not really sure that that's going to be a super popular selling point when it comes to tax dollars. You know, we always talk about pot for potholes and bridging budget gaps. You know, in New York, it was a pretty big, you know, conversation starter to think about, can we fix the subway? It was, what was it? I don't know. I can't remember what the phrase was, toking for trains or something, but I maybe just made that up. But
if it was the 1980s, it could be toking for tokens.
Yeah, there you go. I missed the tokens. I think that could be a really interesting model that could take off. But, you know, we're privatized mostly right now. So
Peter in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you? I wanted to ask about kind of the farmer side of thing a little more. It's exciting to hear talk about seed to, I forget what, you know, the sale. Seed to wheat, whatever it was called, integration. But, I mean, are we going to have opportunities for small farmers to actually benefit from this, or is it just going to turn into large corporations running the entire grow operation?
Yeah, it's a great question to focus on the farmers, because we've really been talking about who gets the licenses to own the retail stores and who can afford to do them at that level. What about the farms?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think how that's going to shake out in New York is, of course, going to depend on how the sausage is made legislatively. You know, however, and with the seed to sale stuff and the vertical integration, I do think that, you know, you will have the companies themselves that are vertically integrated growing for themselves, of course. You know, however, you know, there very likely will be opportunities for small farmers. To what degree, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think that there could be some really interesting opportunities for small farmers when it comes to hemp. We don't really know what the ceiling of the hemp industry is yet. That's just kind of getting, you know, off the ground thanks to the Farm Bill of 2018. But I am hearing more and more from sources that sort of hemp farming is where it's at.
What does it cost to open a retail store? Any idea?
Yeah, I would not be the most accurate person in the world on that, because it depends on so many things. I mean, it depends on, you know, one, is the company vertically integrated, of course, and two, you know, just like location. But, you know, the startup costs of opening a retail shop are lower than, say, perhaps opening a lab, where you have this kind of like initial startup cost of, you know, gas chromatography machines and all of that sort of thing. But yeah, as far as like very specific figures, I think it's going to depend on the location. It's going to depend on the type of license. It's going to depend on whether that company's already franchised, that sort of thing.
Peter in Wharton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, my question is, why can't people, none of these systems, none of these ways, people can just grow a few plants at home? That's still going to be illegal in most of these schemes.
Right. Home grow, which you would think, if you were coming to it cold, would be the least controversial thing, that if it's legal to own and use in your own home, it would be legal to grow in your own home. But
you would think
that's not where New York and New Jersey are going.
Yeah, I mean, logically, it makes a lot of sense. But then, you know, I start thinking a little bit like my friends who live in some of these like very tall apartment buildings, and sort of like thinking a little bit about what's it going to be like a year or two down the road when supers are getting constant complaints about the smell, or somebody's growing too many plants and it's very heavy and that sort of thing. You know, I think in a city like New York, home grow becomes very complicated in that regard, as far as, you know, air quality. However, and I also think home grow is a big sticking point when it comes to, you know, like lower income consumers, whether somebody's growing it for themselves for just adult use or for medical use. But it's definitely a lot cheaper for somebody to grow their own medicine or to grow their own cannabis. And I think a lot of people really care about it. And I think it's going to be a point of pretty hot debate among lawmakers.
And I see that Governor Cuomo's bill only allows home grow for patients in the medical program, whereas Senator Krueger's bill allows an additional limited amount. But maybe people have, I think that, you know, we get a lot of calls on home grow when we do this series. And I think what the suspicion is out there is that the limitation on home grow is really a giveaway to Big Weed, because they want a monopoly. How much do you think that's actually the case, as opposed to other legitimate concerns? You mentioned air quality or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is part of the equation. I mean, it's an ingredient in the equation. I don't know if it's obviously the only one. You know, I also think that when it comes down to it, you know, I understand the suspicion around that. And as I said, that is part of it. But, you know, growing your own cannabis is sort of like somebody who tinkers with like home brewing. It's not somebody who's going to be, you know, making their own IPA to supply the entire city or anything. So I don't know that it's like the biggest role, but it definitely does play a role. But I do think there will be people, obviously, who want to take advantage of that.
And last thing, we've been talking about a couple of the versions of a bill in New York. The New Jersey bill has provisions to assist micro businesses. If you're familiar with that, do you know how the state plans to help small growers or small distributors?
Yeah, so in both New York and New Jersey, the equity components were for sure the sticking point. And that's where the biggest conversations were, the biggest debates were, and I think it was the single thing that held it up. You know, as far as assistance, it comes down to a number of different options when it comes to community reinvestment and how communities that have been disproportionately harmed by the war on drugs are actually reinvested. It comes down to job training and whether people are actually prepared to enter the industry if they're from disadvantaged backgrounds. It comes down to simply just, you know, helping to give them a leg up and give them some sort of actual brick and mortar advantage to getting a license, maybe a little bit of a head start. There are a lot of forms that it can take. I think when those conversations resume in earnest, in both New York and New Jersey, equity is probably going to be number one on everyone's mind. Home grow is probably in the top five.
Yeah, and I think that the equity questions, from what I've been learning through this series, really never took root in any of the current 10 legal states. And so you have big weed, if you want to call it that, pretty much in all the 10 legal states right now. And it's really in New York and New Jersey where this is becoming a big political fight for sort of the next phase of legal recreational marijuana, if it gets passed at all, and that this is really going to be the big thing to watch over the next month or 2 months, this period when both Governor Murphy and Governor Cuomo are trying to get it through. How much do you think that's the case?
Well, first of all, I like that inadvertent pun. It never took root. I think that this is going to, equity is going to be front and center. I really think that this is going to be where everybody is going to, frankly, hold the two governors' feet to the fire a little bit on it. And I think constituents and voters are going to hold the lawmakers' feet to the fire a little bit, too. I think one thing to keep in mind, though, is that what New York and New Jersey lawmakers are trying to do right now has never been done before, which is to legalize and create a regulated market by legislature. You know, it's always been by the ballot box, which is a little bit easier, and it kind of gets pushed through and then kind of like smoothed out in the like sort of after effects of it. What's happening is that like we're watching everything happen in real time, and everybody kind of gets a say, and this mm-hmm. is what makes it far more complicated.
Democracy.
But yeah, it's democracy in action on legalization.
And then hopefully, if you're for legalization, this won't stop it so much that it would all, I would say, go up in smoke, except nobody smokes anymore. Everybody vapes. So we will leave it there for today. My guest has been Allison Martin, co-founder of Cannabis Wire, co-author of the book A New Leaf, The End of Cannabis Prohibition, and an adjunct professor at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Thank you so much for coming on again.
Thank you.
And join us tomorrow when our series Reefer Managed continues. We will be taking a look at the illicit marijuana market and why it's going to likely persist and present a big challenge for New York and New Jersey if the states do legalize. We continue Reefer Managed through the end of the week. And don't forget about our 3-hour national call-in special on Saturday from noon to 3 Eastern Time. I will be co-hosting with Anne-Marie Awad from the legal state of Colorado. And our concept is Ask a Legal State. That's the name of the special on Saturday, Ask a Legal State. And we will put people from states like New York and New Jersey that are considering legalization, in touch with people from states like Colorado that already has it, to ask a whole lot of questions about what's working and what's not. So I hope you join us for tomorrow's edition and also Saturday's noon to 3 national call-in special. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We turn the page and continue on today's Brian Lehrer Show right after this.